can assent to.
And I wanted to ask you, while so much attention has been focused on the Israeli wars in Gaza and in Lebanon, talk about what the situation is right now in the West Bank for Palestinians, and has it ever been at this crisis level in the past?
No, I mean it's horrifying what's happening in the occupied West Bank, and it's like you said, it has never. Excuse me. It has never been at this level of brutality. UNRWA reports that there's been 40,000 Palestinians displaced. We are seeing the Jenin refugee camp and other places in the West Bank bombed every single day. There are more and more martyrs. And we've heard, you know, many months ago that the Israelis, you know, gave the settlers 200,000 rifles, and you see these rifles while you're walking around the West Bank.
We're going to have to leave it there now, but we're going to do part two right afterwards and post it at democracynow.org. And I want to ask you about your dedication to Dr. Rafet Al-Arir. His body was just found. Mohammed El-Kurd, his new book is out today, Perfect Victims. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KBOO, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County will open additional warming shelters tonight as freezing temps and cold winds continue. State representatives say dismantling the Department of Education would have a big impact on Oregon students. And Portland Public Schools considers cost cuts to their high school modernization plans. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 11th, 2025. I'm Althea Billings. Two additional warming shelters will open tonight in Multnomah County after three were open last night. There's a cold weather advisory tonight for much of Oregon and southwest Washington. That includes the greater Portland metro area, the Cascade Foothills, the Willamette Valley, and the Oregon coast. Very cold temperatures, as low as 15 to 25 degrees, are forecasted, and with wind, it can feel even colder. The National Weather Service advises people who are going outside to dress warmly and make sure their skin is covered. Frostbite and hypothermia will happen if unprotected skin is exposed to these low temperatures. They also advise that people check on their older family members, friends, and neighbors. Multnomah County will open five severe weather shelters tonight due to these freezing temperatures. They'll be open at 8 tonight until at least noon on Wednesday. The shelters could be open longer if the weather is still bad. 285 people came to the warming shelters that were open last night. 177 other folks used the Salvation Army winter shelters or shelter overflow beds because of the cold. The warming shelters that continue to be open tonight are Cook Plaza at 19421 Southeast Stark Street in Gresham, the Hollywood Shelter at 1815 Northeast 43rd Avenue in Portland, that's around the corner from the Hollywood Theater, and the Northwest 14th Avenue shelter at 600 Northwest 14th Avenue in Portland. Two new shelters are open. This includes Ascension Catholic Church at 743 Southeast 76th Avenue in Portland and Grand Oak Shelter at 324 Southeast Grand in Portland. Each of these shelters is ADA accessible, pets are welcome, and transportation is available. TriMet will not turn people away who can't pay the fare while shelters are open. People can also find out about getting transportation to shelters by calling 211. The county says that 211 coordinated transportation for 68 people last night, and community volunteers helped bring 30 others to shelter. County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson said in a statement, quote, "These temperatures combined with wind chill factor can be life-threatening, which is why we're expanding shelter locations and capacity. No one seeking shelter will be turned away," end quote. Officials say if residents see someone who is not dressed for the conditions, they can call the county non-emergency line and request a welfare check at 503-823-3333. More information about Multnomah County's severe weather response is online at multco.us/cold. President Donald Trump is threatening to dismantle the Department of Education, and armed guards prevented Democratic leaders from entering the agency last week. What would it mean for Oregon students to lose federal education funding? Isabel Charlet finds out.
After introducing a resolution condemning attempts to defund public education, Oregon Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici was denied access to the U.S. Department of Education last Friday. Bonamici, along with other Democratic lawmakers, was trying to meet with the agency's acting director, but was blocked by armed officers. Bonamici says federal funding is crucial to maintaining Oregon's Title I schools, special ed, and other programs.
I'm going to fight the privatization of public education. I'm going to fight cuts to public education, and I'm definitely going to fight the proposed elimination of the Department of Education.
Trump cannot legally abolish the Department of Education on his own, and he is unlikely to have the votes needed in Congress. He is, however, expected to release an executive order to gradually close down the agency. Trump has already ordered the Education Department to make it easier for families to use public funds to pay for private or charter schools. Bonamici says voucher dollars from these programs largely go to families that already attend private schools. She adds that vouchers are meaningless to people in rural communities.
To say to those families, okay, we're going to take away some of your public school dollars. Here's a voucher you can use to go to another school. There's no other school in many of those areas.
Supporters of privatizing public schools cite low test scores as evidence of the system's failure, with Oregon students ranking among the nation's lowest in reading and math. Bonamici argues low test scores have more to do with equity. She says students from wealthier families tend to perform well on tests. So instead of defunding public schools, we should be asking how to better support low-income students.
Do they need tutoring? Do they need to feel more secure in school? Do they need smaller classes? There's lots of things that we can do.
Bonamici adds that having a well-rounded curriculum, including career and technical education, is important for student retention and success, and these programs are often only possible with federal funds. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Portland Public School Board will meet this evening at 6:30 to consider a resolution to outline how to reduce costs for high school modernizations. The school district has already completed a few renovations of area high schools, but more are on the list. Currently, the school district doesn't have enough funds to finish the work at Cleveland, Wells, and Jefferson High Schools. They'll need to send the school bond measure back to voters, likely this May, in order to get the money needed to finish this work. The board will discuss a resolution tonight on how to cut costs from these renovations. One of these has to do with reducing costs that go towards general contractors. Another is rethinking the modernization plans themselves. That includes reducing the square footage of the revamped high schools to 295,000 square feet, which is what Lincoln and Franklin have. That would cut some 20,000 to 25,000 square feet from Jefferson, Wells, and Cleveland that is planned so far. Another way the district wants to cut costs is in building materials and by backing off some of their environmental goals. The plan says they intend to meet the minimum standards for efficiency, but won't necessarily shoot for a LEED Gold certification anymore. School board member Julia Brim Edwards is one of the members bringing forward this proposal. She said in a statement, quote, "Cleveland Wells and Jefferson High School communities all deserve modernized and improved schools, similar to what other high schools have received. We've had time to now review and identify areas where cost reductions can be made while still delivering new, excellent high schools for our students. And importantly, the savings from the cost reductions can be added to the funds already committed in the bond to improvements and essential repairs in PPS's aging elementary and middle schools," end quote. The school board work session is tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Profit Center at 501 North Dixon Street in Portland, or it's also available online. The medical research community has been in a state of shock over budget-cutting plans being carried out by the Trump administration. Even with new legal action, there's still deep concern about derailing progress when it comes to medical breakthroughs, as well as harming communities that benefit from research work. Mike Moen reports from North Dakota.
A lawsuit has been filed against the Trump administration over its budget-cutting plans that target medical research led by colleges and universities. Their allies warn of negative consequences for curing diseases as well as local economies. The suit was brought by Minnesota and 21 other states after the National Institutes of Health said it would follow through on orders to cut $4 billion through a grant funding formula for indirect expenses. North Dakota isn't part of the legal case, but an analysis says the state could lose more than $3 million in research funds. Ellie Dahoney with Research America says no matter the state, the pain will be quickly felt.
The suddenness of it is one of the ways that you degrade your research capacity.
Beyond the impact on finding cures for diseases like Alzheimer's, Dahoney warns of job losses at lab equipment makers and other supporting businesses. Trump advisors suggest too much grant money goes to overhead costs, but advocates say that argument misrepresents the facts. They say even indirect funds keep the lights on at university labs and support other key infrastructure like data storage. A federal judge on Monday temporarily blocked the cuts while the case proceeds. Dahoney says medical research at the academic level needs to play out first because the private sector doesn't have the resources or patience to play the long game in advancing treatments. She also warns slowing scientific progress could keep more people dealing with chronic health issues from improving their quality of life and participating in the workforce.
I know a person who is on Social Security disability. She went on a biologic. She had rheumatoid arthritis. And now she's working full-time.
Dahoney says abruptly stalling important research work also benefits global competitors like China. She feels there's room for groups like hers to work with the Trump administration on finding efficiencies, but only if they actually boost research capacity, not reduce it. This is Mike Moen for Prairie News Service.
President Donald Trump approves 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum, and some places buck policy trends on sex education and immigration. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
U.S. Steel was one of our great companies, and through a lot of stupidity and bad government and also bad management of the company, it lost that luster. But it's going to gain it back, and tariffs are going to help. Tariffs are going to make it very successful again.
President Donald Trump is imposing 25% tariffs on steel and aluminum imports to take effect immediately. Two countries where the levies would hit are Mexico and Canada, where higher tariffs on all goods are already planned. Economists say higher metals prices could bring greater domestic steel production, though aluminum depends on factors like energy costs. They also say the tariffs would inflate the prices of products like cars that use most of these commodities. Democratic members of Congress opposed to Trump administration plans to dismantle the Department of Education are being denied access to the agency. Oregon Congresswoman Susan Bonamici was blocked by armed guards from a meeting with the department's acting director. She intends to defend department support for schools in her state with programs for students who are low income, have disabilities, or require special education.
I'm going to fight the privatization of public education. I'm going to fight cuts to public education, and I'm definitely going to fight the proposed elimination of the Department of Education.
The acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has imposed a complete stop work order at the agency created after the Great Recession. The CFPB has long drawn opposition from banks, the financial industry, and their Republican allies. And with its possible closure, states like Minnesota are bolstering their consumer protections. Kathy McLear with AARP Minnesota says ordinary families need the protection.
In many cases, these are bad actors who are overseas. You can't track them down. And it's very difficult for anyone who has been defrauded to get even some of those resources back.
Meanwhile, New Mexico is a rural state bucking a trend towards less sex ed. Groups in the state are backing Senate Bill 258, requiring comprehensive human sexuality education for public school students. Equality New Mexico's Nathan Saavedra says even in the states requiring sex ed, there's no guarantee it's high quality or covers topics like HIV needed to keep young people healthy.
Our hope mostly is to save lives. We know that sex education does save lives, and it improves the health of all youth. It decreases bullying and harassment. Sex education is harm reduction from our perspective.
Conversely, New York is a blue city pulling back from previous migrant sanctuary policies. Mayor Eric Adams is letting Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers enter all city properties, including schools and shelters, without a warrant if a city worker reports any safety threats. This comes as Adams has been making overtures to Trump, and the new leaders at the Justice Department are directing prosecutors to drop bribery charges against the mayor. Trump's controversial pick to lead intelligence has cleared an important hurdle. On a party-line vote, the Senate has advanced former Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard's nomination to the floor for final consideration. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the pro-nuclear legislation making its way through the Oregon legislature. At 6, it's This Way Out, then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear and cold with an overnight low of 26 degrees. A severe weather advisory is in effect through Wednesday. Tomorrow's weather will be cold and clear as well with a daytime high of 42. Today in history, in 1938, the BBC produces the world's first ever science fiction television program, an adaptation of a section of the Carol Chapek play RUR that coined the term robot. The quote of the day is from American political philosopher Eric Hoffer, who said, quote, "Rudeness is the weak man's imitation of strength." The governor of Montana has met with tribes to try to resolve a long-standing battle over law enforcement funding on the Flathead Reservation. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte's office met with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes and local officials last week to settle a dispute over law enforcement funding on the Flathead Reservation. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has the latest.
For years, Lake County has sought state funding to cover its cost for enforcing and prosecuting felonies on the reservation. It's exercised that authority under a decades-old agreement with the state and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. The county is once again backing legislation that would fund its law enforcement services for tribal members, but Commissioner Gail Decker says this time is different.
The county is saying, fund us until the state can retrocede and the feds can come in and take it over.
That bill would give the county a little more than half of what it says it costs to police the reservation over the next 2 years. The state intends to pull out of the law enforcement agreement known as Public Law 280, but the timeline is unknown. Gianforte's office did not respond to a request for comment about whether it supports temporary funding for Lake County. If both the county and state pull out, it'll be left up to the tribes and the federal government to provide law enforcement. The tribes have taken over more felony cases, but it's unclear if they are able to take every case. Federal officials have long said they do not have the resources to spare for the reservation. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
An author of a new report says institutions need to do more to close the higher education graduation gap for Native Americans. As Isabel Charlet reports, That includes in Oregon, where there are some efforts to boost higher education among Native students.
The report notes at just 25%, Native Americans have the lowest college-going rate of any racial group in the country. Cheryl Crazy Bull with the American Indian College Fund, who helped author the report, recommends states set specific higher education goals focused on increasing Native participation. She adds they should prioritize direct engagement with tribes and schools to provide resources, as well as expanding recruitment practices.
Those practices can often exclude Native students who live in reservation, rural areas, as well as urban Native students.
In 2022, Oregon made public universities free for Native students enrolled in one of the state's 9 federally recognized tribes through the Oregon Tribal Stewardship Grant. The program has been gaining steam over the years, but the graduation gap, made larger during the pandemic, has not closed. While Crazy Bull says financial barriers play a big part in preventing Native people from accessing higher education, she adds not all issues can be solved with money.
How the institutions create a place or a sense of belonging for students. That's just a constant.
Native students can apply for the Oregon Tribal Stewardship Grant until April, as long as funds are available. I'm Isabel Charlet.
Former Interior Secretary Deb Haaland is running for governor of New Mexico. The announcement was made in a video which was launched Tuesday. In the video, Haaland talks about her time in Congress and at the Interior Department, saying among things she worked on in the state, helping open small businesses, expanding solar power, and bringing water to rural communities. Her platform for governor includes lowering costs for families, improving schools, and addressing crime prevention. Haaland, a Pueblo woman, made history becoming one of the first Native American women to serve in Congress and the first Native person to hold the position of Secretary of the Interior. Haaland says in the coming weeks, she'll be traveling the state to hear directly from community members. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The growing popularity of electric vehicles is creating new job opportunities. As chargers expand across the U.S., more technicians are needed to troubleshoot them. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the U.S. expands its network of electric vehicle charging stations, there's a growing need for workers who know how to maintain this technology and fix problems quickly when a charger stops working.
One of the things I wanted to do first was to help establish a workforce of folks that could even understand how to troubleshoot something like that.
Camille Terry is co-founder and CEO of Charger Help. Her company offers EV charger maintenance and repair services, and it runs training programs to prepare people for this specialized career. Participants learn about EVs and batteries, how to maintain and repair charging equipment, and how to diagnose software problems with the technology. She says some people transitioning to this line of work have previous experience as maintenance or repair technicians in other industries, but she says it's not necessary.
We do like folks that have prior field service experience, but personally, some of my best technicians actually had never had any field service experience, and they more so just had a tenacity to learn, and they've proven themselves to be some of our best troubleshooters that we have on staff.
And their expertise will help ensure that EV chargers are up and running when people need them. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to Global Citizen Commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. He says, the Trump administration is relying mainly on threats to get its way. While threats sometimes work, they're often born of ignorance about individual countries, resulting in alienating traditional friends of the U.S. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. The president, along with Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Elon Musk, have in the course of 2 weeks reduced the foreign policy of the nation to one act, threats. Sometimes the threats are overt, other times implied. Sometimes they work, sometimes not. Here's some examples. Trump has threatened Denmark and Greenland, insisting that Greenland should be acquired by the U.S. Next, Marco Rubio told Panama's president that the status quo in the Canal Zone was unacceptable because of Chinese economic control and suggested that Panama either sell the canal to the U.S. or eliminate fees for U.S. military vessels. Trump imposed high tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China, then paused them on Canada and Mexico for 30 days, evidently to see what kind of deal he could extract from them. Next, Trump has suggested that tariff hikes are also on the way for the EU countries and India. Next, Trump has told the five BRICS nations, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, countries he can't identify but which he thinks include Spain, as I'll mention below, told them that he'll impose 100% tariffs if they stop using the U.S. dollar. Trump has eviscerated the U.S. Agency for International Development, a criminal organization, says Musk, essentially freezing, if not ending, vital humanitarian assistance to numerous countries and non-governmental organizations. Next, Trump has told Ukraine to end the war by appeasement of Russia and told Russia to be satisfied with territory it is occupying. Next, Trump is cajoling Egypt and Jordan to accept, against their interests, a million or more Gazan Palestinians. Next, Trump has told Israel the U.S. will own Gaza and make it into another Riviera. Trump has warned and gotten Venezuela to accept deportees and return U.S. prisoners without conditions. And Elon Musk has interfered in German and British politics on behalf of far-right parties. It has been said many times that Donald Trump is basically ignorant of the world, but he's an expert when it comes to threatening other countries that may be dependent on the U.S. Dana Millward, writing for the Washington Post on Trump's what he called astounding ignorance, offers this story. On his first evening back in office, Trump invited reporters into the Oval Office, where he discussed his new decree that NATO members must spend 5% of GDP on their militaries. He singled out Spain, which has the lowest level of military spending, 1.28% of any NATO member. It's also the case that NATO members are far from agreeing on 5% when most are struggling to meet 2%, as they had agreed in 2014. Still, Spain has been significantly increasing its military spending in recent years, and in fact the U.S. only spends around 3% of GDP on the military. Trump ignored these considerations and went on to criticize Spain for being a member of the BRICS. You know what a BRICS nation is, he said? You'll figure it out. Well, Trump needs to figure it out, since neither Spain nor any other NATO or EU country is a BRICS member. I'm guessing that Trump hasn't the slightest idea which countries are in BRICS or what BRICS is all about. But by God, he's going to slap 100% tariff duties on Spain and the BRICS. Or how about this explanation that Trump gave on his social media site for the tariff increases on Canada, Mexico, and China? He said it's common sense. I'd say it's babbling. Trump wrote that countries like Canada, Mexico, China, and too many others to name continue the decades-long rip-off of America, both with regard to trade, crime, and poisonous drugs that are allowed to so freely flow into America. Those days are over, he says in the usual capital letters. The USA has major deficits with Canada, Mexico, and China, owes $36 trillion, I don't know where he got such a figure, and we're not going to be the stupid country any longer. Make your product in the USA and there are no tariffs. Why should the US lose trillions of dollars in subsidizing other countries? This will be the golden age of America, he says. Will there be some pain? Yes, maybe, and maybe not. But we will make America great again, and it will all be worth the price that must be paid. We are a country that is now being run with common sense, and the results will be spectacular. We will be hearing more such nonsense and many more threats in days to come. Likely candidates are all the NATO countries for not spending enough on defense, China again and again as the trade war heats up, Japan and South Korea over trade deficits, Ukraine for being disloyal. And you wonder why Canadians are booing when the U.S. national anthem is played at Canadian hockey matches? The U.S. is losing friends all over the world, and our adversaries will surely take advantage. I'm Mel Gartoff for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 11th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Mel Gertov and Emma Lugo. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Mike Bowen, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth. We're looking at the slate of pro-nuclear bills making their way through the Oregon legislature. We'll be right back.